And mobility is also strength training. People think of mobility as just stretching. Passive stretching is doing very little for people. That's kind of an old way of thinking of like, oh, lengthen the muscles. That's really what's holding you back. It's not. Mostly what's holding you back is that your joints are stiff. You're weak in in-range positions. So people are real strong in the middle. We live our lives in the middle. We don't live our lives at in-ranges. But golf is played at in-ranges.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly. Listen to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, Nick, thanks for joining the Member Guest Podcast. And you're from San Diego, correct?
Yeah, California, all around California.
Are you guys?
I live in San Diego currently.
Okay. Are you guys, I imagine you're seeing maybe some of the crazy sunsets or stuff from the LA fires right now. Is everything good where you're at?
Yeah, things are good here. That's about two and a half hours north of us. It surprisingly hasn't been super smoky. Usually when we get fires around, it gets pretty smoky here too, but it hasn't been. So I don't know if the Santa Ana breezes are kind of like blowing it out offshore. That's my guess. So yeah, no, it hasn't been too bad here.
Yeah, well, good. And I imagine you're still able to golf right now, right? In January. It's negative 10 here in Minnesota, so we don't get to golf at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a little different. It's looks like a sunny day today, not a cloud in the sky, but it's a little chilly. It's probably like 50, low 50s right now. So
yeah, see, that's wonderful golfing weather for us at this time of the year. If we were to ever get it. Last year, we had guys from our club literally were able to play every month of the calendar year because in like January and February, we had some call like 35 and 40 degree days or like low 40s. And people would go out and play and the public courses would open up and just say like, hey, you guys can come out and walk. If you guys want to play, we'll put flag sticks in there. So people were grinding in January, February, March months.
Wow. Yeah, no, I'm unfamiliar with that.
I was going to say, if you ever want to try it, you can come up, but I'd rather you come up in like August or September when it's in the 80s and 90s. So quick intro about you would be awesome. Like we just talked about before, I found you because I'm on my kind of elite amateur journey. Clearly you're a few steps ahead of me, but found you through like golf fitness and performance stuff. Got kind of hooked on your journey, trying to get invited and play in the Masters. And so I'd like to talk about that, but just real quick, it'd be awesome to get an intro for our audience.
Sure. Yeah. I'm a physical therapist. So I guess starting from the beginning, I'm from California. I lived in LA, San Diego, Sacramento. I've been in San Diego half my life. And I started playing golf when I was 14. I played pretty much every sport before that, baseball, basketball, soccer, roller and ice hockey. I know you wouldn't expect ice hockey from California, but some of us play it.
You guys get some talent, man. You get some talent coming from Cali every now and again.
Yeah, it's just it's super expensive to play because rink time is so expensive. But I used to love hockey. And so, yeah, I played every sport growing up. I was always, you know, I had to be doing something. I was not a sit at home kid. I think that's a really good thing for kids is to develop a well-rounded set of skills. And I think that ends up translating very well to golf. I think there's a lot of golfers who've done that. I started golf a little late at 14. And so I was a little behind, but I practiced a ton when I first started because that's kind of my mind. That's just how I am. When I get into something and I get focused on something, I just go 100% at it. And my dad was a scratch golfer, so he kind of taught me the game. And I was able to get down to be good very quickly. Like I think I broke 80 within a year of starting to play golf. And then I started playing the summer before my freshman year in high school, and I made varsity my freshman year that spring. and then played golf on the varsity team, and then ended up just playing golf through high school and going to college, playing golf in college, and then kind of got burnt out after college. I went to PT school, and I kind of was burnt out on golf. You know, after college, I was used to playing golf for free. So after college, you know, clubs are full price, you know, you don't play free golf anymore. And so, balls are expensive, you know, everything's expensive. So I was like, and I was also just, I was kind of just tired of the grind. I found myself I kind of feel like I hit a ceiling. My last couple years of college, I just wasn't really getting much better, and kind of dashed my hopes. You know, I knew I wasn't going to play pro because I wasn't good enough. And I just kind of was like, I got this new journey of a PT school. Let's throw myself into that full bore. That was 3 years. And then started surfing a lot and really got into surfing much more. And I just kind of did that every day for my release. And eventually, some 7-8 years later, I had a buddy of mine basically start kind of getting into golf that I went to PT school with. I was living with him at the time. And he started getting into golf, and he wanted me to, you know, he knew I played in college, even though I wasn't playing anymore. And he was like, oh, let's go out to the golf course and kind of give me some pointers and stuff. And eventually he kind of started dragging me out there every so often to kind of play with him and show him what to do. And it kind of got me playing a little bit again. And then, you know, it was fun kind of teaching him the game and seeing him get better. And so over the next couple of years, I started playing kind of little by little more and more, and helped him get down to like a single digit handicap. Basically, you know, he was 30 years old or late 20s at the time. And so seeing him progress and get better was fun, and just kind of like coaching him along the way. And then I end up catching the bug at some point again, and about 2021, I think, was the first year I played tournaments again after, that would have been, 10, 11 years off from tournament golf after college, and, started playing tournaments again, easing my way in, played like one or two tournaments that year, played a couple, two or three tournaments the next year. And I found it was very difficult getting back into tournament golf, much more so than I realized. When I was younger, I was just kind of used to it, playing junior golf, playing high school golf, playing college golf. And then when I got back into it, I was just completely out of the rhythm, like, you know, scoring much higher than I normally do, playing regular, and getting way more nervous and like over putts, like my hands shaking, and just all these things that like I wasn't really accustomed to feeling. And I was like, man, okay, so this is what other people feel who don't just naturally play tournaments all the time. And it's taken a while, but each year I've gotten a little bit better. I played in a little bit more tournaments. And then last year, I just went full bore, and I was like, I'm going to play in as many tournaments as I can. That's when I started the Road to Augusta thing. And it was my best tournament year. My scoring average has gone down each year. I'm still not playing as my normal golf. I'm still not playing like how I normally play with friends. I wouldn't say it's like even, but it's getting closer each year, as I'm getting more comfortable, getting more reps. So yeah, that brings us to now. I'm just kind of like, I'm trying to document that journey. I kind of started it as just like, I'd probably do a few posts on it, just to kind of show people what I'm doing. And people have liked it. And so I've just kept going with it, because people are like, this is like, I get comments like, this is my favorite series on, you know, social media right now. Like, keep it going. I get a lot of those sorts of comments. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll keep it going if people like it.
Yeah, well, you've obviously surpassed a pretty large following from it. And it's how I found you. And to kind of back up a little bit, I've got a lot to unpack there, but I want to start from kind of like the taking 10 years off, if you will. So how do you, I mean, obviously you're clearly a natural, like if you played from a young age, but I think a lot of people can relate to maybe, you know, call it the COVID years, 2020, right around there when golf really took off. I think a lot of people took up the sport again, whether it was, you know, more of a hobby or something that, you know, they really wanted to get into, like myself. I mean, I didn't play, you know, in high school or college or anything. I didn't even really play as a junior. Started kind of after college and then really caught that bug, you know, call it 2019, 2020, joined a club and kind of like dropped all my other hobbies and like in your terms, went full bore on it. And so I'm kind of interested to hear, like, one, why do you think that is? And two, for you personally, like coming back, are you a better player now than you were in college, or are you about the same? So I do think it's interesting. A lot of guys that played in college and are now a little bit older say they're a lot better now than they were back in, you know, 2009, 10, 11, people that are probably around our age. So curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, 100%. And that's kind of one of the things that's kind of got me. I guess that's one of the reasons I started the Road to Augusta thing was because, like I said, like the whole reason I quit golf after college was because I felt like I wasn't getting any better. And I was kind of like, all through college, I was probably about the same. I would kind of be like hovering around maybe that plus two sort of area. And never really any better than, you know, plus two and a half, which, I mean, these days it might not even get you on a Division I college team. But the competition is so stacked these days. But back in the day, it was good enough and I could play. I was very consistent. I think the reason why my handicap never really got a lot better than kind of in that plus one and a half to plus two area was because I didn't shoot that many like low under par scores, but I didn't shoot high scores either. So I played a very, and that's kind of what my dad taught me. He taught me, he kind of learned from like the Jack Nicklaus type books and things like that, where it's all about strategy. It's all about like, don't make big numbers, play for your misses, plot your way around the course, avoid penalty strokes, those sort of things. So I would go into rounds like that. Like, I would lay up a lot. If I wasn't comfortable, I had no problem laying up, right? If there was trouble around and I felt like there was a chance I could hit it in the trouble, I would play as safe as I could while still giving me an opportunity to at least make par option birdie and not have option birdie, option double bogey, right? I would pretty much try to take that out of the equation at all times. And so because of that, you know, I shot around par a lot. I was pretty much between 70 and 74 almost every time. And so I rarely shot over about 74 or 75, almost never. And then I rarely shot under 69, 70. And so, you know, handicap's based on your lowest scores. So if you're rarely shooting mid 60s or anywhere 67 or below, you're not going to have a lower handicap than plus one, plus two. And so that was a big part of it, but I just kind of felt like, yeah, I wasn't getting better. I felt like there were some mechanics things that I was taught at a young age that kind of limited my potential. And, but I didn't know at the time. This was, I mean, 2010. So, you know, there wasn't the social media and instruction. Like, we have so much instruction at our fingertips and so much knowledge at our fingertips now. It wasn't that way back then. And so I was kind of like, I didn't know what to do about it. I was like, I know something needs to be changed for me to reach that next level. But of the instructors I had around me, I was kind of like, didn't necessarily trust them to get me there. And then I just didn't know at the time. I was like, not willing to put in the work to try, 'cause I'd already tried for so long. I was like, I'm over it. And so Like yeah, I said, so I had a new adventure and so moved on.
I was going to say, is it like, do you think the lower score is a trans, like, is it a distance thing? Is it, because obviously your handle now, I believe, is Golf Strong Hit Bombs. Yeah. I would imagine you're probably hitting the ball further now than you did back in 2010, even though you may have been
100%.
In college and a nice, you know, young 20-year-old, super strong, all that stuff. And now you're a little bit older, but you're probably hitting a lot further now. I mean, is it as simple as you're hitting it further now? So your dispersion to the hole, you know, more wedges, right? Lower irons as opposed to longer ones. It's easier to hit more greens. Like, is that what it is? Because, I mean, that feels like that's where the game is trending.
Yeah.
If it's not there already. So now my question is, like, how do you get from a, call it +2 to +4? Because this is the area that I'm in. I hover around, like you said, +1 to +2. And I think my low is a +2.8. And that's just because, like, on a 2-week stretch, I went out of my mind where I had two, like, 66s. And I think, exactly, like, a 9-under. Like, I got there, but it wasn't sustainable for my game. So I'm kind of back in that +1 to +2 range. And there's a lot of things that go into this, but, you know, how do you consistently get to that +3, +4 that I think a lot of people would consider elite level amateur golf, like the ability to win club championships, to play in tournaments, go low, qualify for, you know, state AMs and opens and all that stuff. How did you get there? And what's your take on it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge jump. Like, people don't, some people realize, but a lot of people don't realize the lower you get in your handicap, the harder it is to get lower, right? Going from a 15 to a 10 or a 20 to a 15 is nothing like going from a 1 to a +3 or from a 0 to a +4, right? It's exponentially harder to drop strokes the lower you get. And so, yeah, I mean, +2 to +4, I mean, I'm 100% a better golfer. You know, I think I'm better in everything, but I'm definitely longer, which has made it easier to be able to score consistently lower. There's no doubt being closer to the hole makes the game easier, right? I get a lot of, it's funny, I get so much pushback on different posts that I'll post about, like, you know, improving, because I'm a physical therapist. I'm TPI certified. I do the golf fitness thing, right? And so I train golfers, and I also have a website with, you know, programs and things for golf fitness and performance. And so I do a lot of posts on that sort of stuff as well. And I get a lot of pushback, people who don't like the distance thing, right? I think it's like, you know, the old timers, or just the people who don't like that in the game for whatever reason, either they don't want to put in the work to get it themselves. Maybe they don't like exercise and they're just not willing to do it. Maybe they don't like the idea of the game changing. I'm not really sure what, there's probably different reasons for different people, but people will, you know, try to say, oh, you know, putt for dough. I get that comment all the time, like, drive for show, putt for dough. And I'm like, yeah, that comment was, or I mean, that saying was invented by short hitters, right? Because it's something that a good putter or a short hitter, like, that's what they hang their hat on. And back in the day, that was like a thing that, okay, like, sure, putt for dough. Yeah, you got to putt to win tournaments, but look at the number one players in the world throughout history. How many of them are short hitters? It's a very small list, right? In the 2000s, basically, you got maybe two. Out of all the 2000s, maybe two of them. Like, I can think of Luke Donald, and I believe Lee Westwood reached number one. But there's just not that many. Like, almost every dominant player, you look at the top 10 on tour, like, almost everyone is at least medium long to long. There are no short hitters. Unless you're an amazing chipper and putter, like, heads and tails above everyone else, right? And so distance is such a huge factor in the game, and it's going to where people are accepting that. And there's so much data to back it up. There's so much strokes gain data to say, like, this is the easiest way to improve your game. And people still push back, but it's like, well, if you don't believe that, like, play from the women's tees. What do you think you're going to shoot from the women's tees as opposed to the tips?
Yeah, there's a reason that there's up tees, there's you know, normal tee, there's white, there's blue, there's black, there's tips, right? Like there's a reason, because it makes it more difficult / more easy depending on the tip, on the tees that you play.
Yeah. And no one would disagree with that, right? Unless they're just like completely sticking their head in the sand. It's like, well, yeah, play from the tips and then play from the women's tees. 100% of the time you're going to shoot better, right? So there's no doubt that being closer to the hole is makes it easier. Like, it's not debatable, but people still try to debate it. But, you know, eventually the data is becoming so overwhelming that, you know, people will be forced to accept it and try and...
Yeah, they can't deny it anymore.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that putting and chipping isn't super important in the game. It is, but the most... So the other aspect to that is also like putting and chipping is much more of a skill. So you have to practice it. You have to get good technique. How many people practice their putting and chipping all the time and don't get any better? There's almost no one who I work with who doesn't get longer, trying to get longer, right? It's a skill that everyone can develop. And it's very easy to develop it relative, like if you're willing to put in some work, get stronger, improve certain things, right? Improve your mobility, improve some sequencing aspects of your swing. 100% of the time, you're going to get longer. I've never had someone not get longer. But how many people go get lessons and practice putting and chipping and don't get any better over 20, 30 years? So sure, continue doing that. But the lowest hanging fruit is just add some speed, add some distance, and almost everyone can add 10 to 20 yards quite easily if they put in just a little effort.
Well, it's interesting too, because I think people really underestimate, like, yeah, there's the distance off the tee, but it also translates into your irons and wedges, right? And now you're hitting a 9-iron from 150 as opposed to a 7-iron from 150. And like you said, you'd be an idiot to say that it's easier to hit your 7-iron than your 9-iron, right? Like, the more loft at the club, the easier it is to hit. That's why people are better with their wedges than they are their 4, 5, and 6 iron. So I think people kind of forget about that too. It's not only off the tee, but translating into your wedges and your low irons, being able to hit those a lot closer than you do your long irons, which is interesting. And on this topic, I wanted to ask you, because I watched one of your posts about the mid-am, and you talked about being able to hit... it was like super tight fairways, right? And you mentioned free wood. And I'm curious why you don't game a mini driver, or if it's just maybe something that hasn't stuck into your bag yet. Because I just put one in. And I think for people that hit it over, call it 280, 290, it's like a no-brainer. And so I want your thoughts on the mini driver kind of conversation that's popped up over the last maybe 6 to 9 months.
So I've never hit a mini driver. I don't really understand it. I guess no one's maybe explained to me the benefit over, because I hit my 3-wood pretty long. Like, I can tee it up a little high, hit it a little high on the face. It comes out with no spin, and I can hit it 290, right? So a mini driver is supposed to be in that range between driver and 3-wood. I get that. But I just don't, for me, I guess I can hit my 3-wood quite a bit long. I normally carry my 3-wood about 270, 275, 270-ish would be off the ground, would be stock. And then if I tee it up, like I said, I hit a little high on the face, I can hit it 290, 300 sometimes. I mean, depending on how firm the fairways are. So, I guess that's why I've never really looked into the mini driver, because I can hit my 3-wood pretty far if I want to. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't get the, maybe you can tell me.
I'll tell you. I've done an extensive amount of research on this, and I think it's backed up by a lot of, so I'm a big decade golf guy. I have done everything. Maybe not everything, but a lot of stuff to try and get my game to the next level. And the latest realization for me was this kind of gap I had between my right now 7-wood and my driver. And the call it general theory or like what stats would back up with mini driver is if you're hitting your driver more than 290, right, which I assume you do if you're hitting your 3-wood 290, let's say you hit it, I don't know, like what do you carry your driver? Probably 315, 310?
No, I carry it about right around 300, 305 usually.
Okay. Yeah, right. So, I mean, you're a long hitter. 90% of the courses that you play, if you drive the ball that far, you don't have to hit 3-wood into greens. I mean, unless you're playing, you know, holes that are 600 yards on par fives, so you're wearing the Torrey hat. Like I can think of the one hole I played the South course the one time, the one, the tee shot kind of goes down the hill and then back up, maybe like hole 6 or 7, I think it's par 5, all the way back. That one's super long, right? And you might be hitting a 3-wood into it. But other than that, if you hit your driver over 300 yards, you're hitting irons and maybe your hybrids into long par 5s. And so then the theory becomes when you carry a mini driver, just comparing a mini driver to a 3-wood, they're easier to hit because of the bigger head. Right. They spin more and they're a lot more forgiving, again, because of the bigger head. And so the thought is you don't have to hit your 3-wood off the deck. And then it's a lot easier to have that kind of 280 club that's easier to hit than a 3-wood and a lot more forgiving that you can use on tight holes. And then a lot of people's counter argument is, well, why not just carry the mini driver as a driver? And the answer is, to your point, well, it's the distance. And if you're saying that, you know, your driver is 310 and you're hitting the fairway every time or like more than normal, you should actually lengthen your driver to hit it even further to gain more of an advantage there. And so for me, like I just went and played in Arizona. We were playing like probably 6,800, 6,900 yard golf courses. I didn't have one par five that I wasn't hitting, you know, like a 230 yard clubbing in, and I would never hit the 3-wood. But there were two or three times that I hit the mini driver off the tee. And for me, it's a lot more forgiving club, easier to control. I can kind of work it both ways if I need to. And it's more of a fairway finder if the driver gets a little wonky. Now, the only solid argument I found against this, Nick, is some people will just say, I'm really fucking good with my 3-wood, right? And that might be you. And it's like, I'm really, really good with it. But for, you know, call it over 90% of people, you just take a bigger head that spins more, is more forgiving. It's going to be a lot easier to hit than a 3-wood. So that's the thought behind the mini driver. And you should check them out. I mean, there's so many on the market now. I think, you know, over the past year, it was really just TaylorMade. And so I've had buddies ask like, okay, well, why isn't every single person on tour getting them? And I go, well, you're going to see a lot more in 2025 because last year Callaway didn't have one. PXG didn't have one. Titleist didn't have one. And now look, every single one of them has a mini driver this year. And you're going to see a lot more in the bag. You only saw people like Rory, Tommy Fleetwood. I think Adam Scott is TaylorMade hitting the mini driver. It was just because TaylorMade was really the only one that had one. And the guys that didn't, they didn't actually have a 3-wood. They would have like a 5-wood and a hybrid in their bag. So they weren't even hitting a 3-wood anyways. So that's my pitch to you for the mini driver.
So the mini driver is like easier. You think it's pretty easy to hit off the deck?
Yeah, I mean, I've only had to hit it off the deck maybe once. And then like on the range, I've tried it. And it's interesting. So for me, when I would hit my 3-wood off the deck, for whatever reason, it was like a draw club. And when I would lose it left. You know, I'd get that kind of like no spinner that would, to your point, go like 280 when I was really trying to hit like a 260, 270 shot. And all of a sudden, I would just like no spin, kind of hook it, and it would go left. I hate to see the ball going left. It is like nearly impossible to hit a mini driver left. And I'm not sure if it's because of bigger head. It's just because of the more spin. I mean, I have mine set up a little open. But even when I follow like the pros or like teaching club pros, they all say like it's almost impossible to draw a mini driver off the deck. It's definitely a cut club. So
interesting. Yeah, well, I'll have to look into it. I didn't know that about the more spin and, you know, I guess I didn't really think about it being more forgiving. I don't really think of like a 3-wood being not forgiving, but
I think that's due to the size of the head, right? You're not going to find a 3-wood head as bigger than a mini driver head. And so you just have more space, right, to miss the ball on the face, I think is why it's more forgiving.
Yeah, well, I'll have to try one out then because if because you're right. I never hit, almost never hit three woods into par fives. It's pretty much always off the tee. So if the mini driver is, you know, more forgiving, straighter off the tee, really, if it's just straighter than my three wood, then it could be a good option.
Yeah, I think it's at least worth a shot. I mean, for me, it was. For everyone I talked to, they all say the same thing, which is it's straighter, it's more forgiving. And sometimes I hit it longer, right? Because you do, the only awkward thing about it is when you tee it up, you know, like a three wood, it's a little bit off the ground, but you know, like obviously you could tee it higher to maybe hit a little higher off the face. But the mini driver, like it's in between a three wood and a driver tee height. And so it looks a little weird when you set up to it. But man, when it comes off the face, it's so easy to hit that high lofted. Like I think most of them were 13.5 degree, you know, drivers. And I hit mine probably 280. And I think I missed the fairway with mine once. It's a pretty damn good club. And so, you know, if the driver gets wonky or you're playing a short course, it's pretty easy to hit and they go nice and high in the air. So I enjoy it.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to look into it then. This year might be the year I switch to the mini driver.
Yeah. Well, so now I want to talk a little bit. And just so you know, like I don't think you would listen to any of our stuff. I would expect you to. You've got a small golf podcast out of Minnesota, but we're total like, or we're just golf junkies, right? So we talk anything about fitness and performance, clubs, you know, we talk a lot about different courses, stuff like that. I want to hear what's in the bag and I want to hear what you're gaming because we're like, you know, kind of into the beginning of the year. A lot of people, this is the time here in Minnesota, they're hitting indoors or going to like Second Swing or local shop to change their setup for next year. What do you game? What's in the bag? And I kind of want to hear you talk through it.
Yeah. So I have, wedges are 60, 55, 51. Well, I guess it's a 56 now and then a 51, gap wedge and then 46 pitching wedge. They're all Vokey, various Vokey wedges. I have the L grind for my 60. I have the M grind for my 56. And then I have F grinds for 51 and 46. And then I have T100 Titleist irons, which I think, I mean, I'm a Titleist iron guy. I've had Titleist irons since my college days. I find it hard going away from them. I've tried other irons and I've never felt like they're, I just don't like the feel, sound, look as much. And then I have, so that's through 4-iron. Then I have a 2.5 19 degree hybrid, which is actually a PXG. And I just got fit for it a couple years ago. I find that a lot of clubs set up a little bit shut, just a degree or two. And that is terrible to my eye. So I like a real square looking face. I would prefer to be open than shut. And so the PXG 2.5 hybrid just really looked good to my eye. And it's just really solid. So I've had that for two and a half years. And that one, I hit that off the tee a lot because I'll hit that 245 stock. But same thing, like if I just tee it up a little higher, and hit it a little off the, like I can hit it 270 and if I want to. So on tight holes, it's really nice. Three wood is also PXG. Same thing. I got it at the same time and it was just, it just sets up really, really nice. It's real square to my eye. And I can hit it a long way if I want to. So, and I hit them both pretty straight. So I've had those for a couple, 2.5 years, almost 3 years now. Or maybe, yeah, about two and a half years. And so then my driver is TaylorMade. I have current, what's the, I had the Sim 2. Yeah, no, not the one after that. I played the Sim 2 for a long time. I cracked that face in the fall. And I started playing the QI10.
Oh, the QIA, last year's model.
Yeah, last year's model. So I started playing that in the fall. And I like it. I think it's a little straighter. I don't know that it quite goes as far as my Sim 2. I feel like maybe it's
Those Sim 2s were hot, man. And you probably, if you cracked the head, you probably had a hot head too. If you were gaming it for a few years, it was probably, it was getting ready to go.
Probably. Yeah. It was, I had it for 3+ years, I think. So, but yeah, the QI is definitely a little straighter, but it's, I think it spins a little bit more. So it doesn't quite go as far, especially if I hit it a little low on the face, which is my tendency. It definitely loses a couple miles per hour ball speed, but it goes very straight. So I'm not too concerned about it. I still hit it far enough, and I'm happy to be a little straighter most of the time.
Hey, what ball do you play?
Pro V1.
Okay, just the normal one, the black one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same. We got somewhat similar. You got a mixed bag too. Your Titleist, PXG, TaylorMade. I always have this conversation with people because, like, for whatever reason, it feels like people really want to marry to, like, one brand. And I'm like, if you just throw your, like, ego out the door and just go get fit, like, you're never going to be true to one brand. That's the one thing that, I don't know if you have this opinion or not, but I sometimes feel like holds pros back because they're all pros, right? Like, they're good with whatever. But I would always be curious to know if players would be better with different types of equipment. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say like Victor Hovland doesn't hit ping amazing. I love ping. I'm a big ping guy. But it's like, man, has he ever tried to hit like a QI 10 wood, or like has he ever tried to hit like Titleist wedges? I mean, you know what I mean? Like it feels like, it's been really cool to see the guys on Live who have now not had their equipment contracts go over and see what they're playing. So I've noticed a lot more guys on Live now. Yeah, they switch it up, and a lot of them are putting with lab golf putters. I saw Dustin Johnson's in a lab. A lot of guys are now using like the broomstick lab putters, which is like, man, it's kind of cool to see now that they can test and play like anything that they want. What are they gaming? Because that's the best advice a fitter ever gave me is like, dude, if they're not playing it on tour, don't use it. Because they only use the best. They tried to use everything. Like if it's not out there, it's probably not worth your time.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't agree more. I don't really care what brand it is. Like certain brands, just because of the look and feel, I'll stick with them. But if there was something that I play that I hit that I felt like I hit better, then I would switch to that. I'm not a big club switcher guy. Like if I find something that I feel like is working for me, and I'm hitting it straight and I'm hitting it how I want, I'll stick with it until it wears out.
Until you crack the face.
Until my irons are getting pretty, pretty worn out. They're probably 75,000 balls in hitting on the range. So yeah, they got a little bit of life left, but probably going to be switching those this year. I'll probably just get T100s again because, like I said, like I think they're the best irons out there personally. But I totally agree. I think most pros would not play all the clubs that they play if they didn't have contracts. I've seen pros lose their game switching clubs from their amateur career, and they sign a contract with a certain company. They switch their clubs, and they lose their game. And I've seen pros actually stop, like opt out of their contract after a year or two of like struggling and go back to their original set of clubs. You know, I don't have any idea what these club manufacturers pay players to play them, but it can't be worth it as far as money that you're going to make playing well in tournaments. Like it can't be comparable. Maybe it is. I don't know. But in my opinion, I feel like it's not worth it.
It's a good point. I would feel like if it wasn't worth it, that the guys like wouldn't do it. But I guess I don't know. I'm honestly more surprised a company like Club Champion or Second Swing or all of these kind of like brand agnostic, you know, club fitting companies haven't gone out and tried to pay big bucks to get somebody. And obviously, like, you know, the big brands like TaylorMade, Titleist, they're going to have way more money to throw at somebody. But it would be interesting if just like, you know, I'm privy to Second Swing. They've got, you know, locations, you know, all over the U.S. They started here in Minneapolis, so I like them. There's a fitter locally that, you know, they don't care what you play. They're going to test you and everything, every shaft, every head, and, you know, what the numbers say is like what to go with. I'm surprised more people haven't like tried to get sponsorships with them. And then you see what their mixed bag looks like. You know, no offense to PXG, but I just don't think their clubs, even testing wise, have ever come up as good as some of the other major manufacturers, yet they have a bunch of people playing their stuff. And so it just tells me, like, you know, a lot of it does have to do with the money, and they're probably not like playing as optimal equipment as they could. But, you know, son of my business, like, clearly they're doing all right and get the checks. So
yeah, I never thought I would play PXG. It wasn't my intention going in when I got fitted for it. It was purely, I just like the look of the head the best, and I think that gave me confidence to hit it straight. I tried every other brand, and I was like, I just didn't like how the head looked on the ground. A lot of them looked shut to me, and, you know, cause a lot of clubs I know that you can open some of them, and I didn't play around with that. I hit them really good, and I still hit them good. I'm happy with them. But I think probably in the next, I'll probably try out these new QI10s. I've heard good things about the QI10, like three wood or mini driver, and potentially some of the seven woods and hybrids and stuff that are coming out now. I could be potentially better. So I'll probably start trying those out. But to this point, I feel like I hit them good, and I haven't really had a need to look elsewhere. But
yeah, well,
Every couple of years when the technology actually jumps, I'll check it out again.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because like that PXG hybrid, I can right off the top of my head think of a guy at our club. His name's Jack Killen, played in the NHL for a while. He's won our club championship. He plays that exact same hybrid. I don't know if it's the 19 degree, but he's like, dude, this is one of the best. Like, this thing is never leaving my bag. And I've seen him, you know, bring it from 250 yards out before, like it's nothing. And so it is funny, like, there's just some of these clubs. You mentioned that Sim 2 and like the Sim 2 Max, that was like one of the most popular drivers that you still see in a lot of people's bags. It's interesting how like certain clubs, they're just like the year they were made or whatever, they're just like, they're just like this amazing club that people seem to take a liking to, and they did a really good job. So yeah, I mean, you can't convince me these professionals don't, like, you know, to your point, it's like the look and the feel of something, and brand agnostic, like, you throw it out the door, you're just going to find something that sets up to your eyes. So clearly you've found it, and like, I've done the same thing with a mixed bag. So my last couple of questions I do want to ask, I know you also get, like you said, your physical therapist. I had this convo with a guy that trains me here locally in Minnesota. And my kind of question is, what is your take on, call it, golf fitness and performance? I think over the last few years, like, a lot of strength and conditioning coaches, you know, have taken a liking or a privy to, like, call it, sport specific working out, right? And then there's other people I just talk about being a good overall athlete. I'm of the realm that, you know, call it 70 to 80% of your training should just be to be a good athlete. And then you get really specific for whatever sport you play, right? Like, for golf, the way that I'm going to train my swing speed is a little bit different than maybe somebody who is, you know, trying to hit a baseball or kick a soccer ball, right? But I'm curious just on your thoughts on, like, call it, quote unquote, golf fitness and performance, and how much of it is specifically the golf, and then how much is just about, you know, being an athlete and being strong and getting your body to move the way that it should.
Yeah. So I think to answer your question, it's individual. And what I mean by that is, you can't really throw, in my opinion, you can't really throw a blanket on it, because I'm not going to, things that are important for one person, particularly like, say, a 15, 20, 25 handicap, or someone maybe who's older as opposed to someone who's younger, right? They're going to need different things, and different things will help them reach where they want to go. So someone like you, who's a plus one, plus two handicap, how much swing specific exercises am I going to do with you? Probably not a ton. Like, if there's certain things that can reinforce certain movements or mechanics that you're trying to achieve in your swing, if there's certain exercises that we can find that are doing that, great. We'll definitely add those into your program. But for someone like you, who your swing is already pretty grooved, you're kind of real close to where you want to be. You're maybe trying to add some distance, some strength, injury prevention, right? There's certain things maybe that we'd be looking at, like, we want to keep you healthy. You are swinging the club probably quite fast anyway. So we want to make sure your body doesn't break down. We want to make sure, that's always, being a PT, that's always my number one, is like, injury prevention comes first. We want to get you out of pain. We want to get you able to practice as much as you want. We want to get you performing your best on the back nine. As people come down the 18th hole, we don't want you feeling fatigued and being like, my back is hurting. Oh, my spine, like, I feel like I can't move. You know, my legs are tired. So like, being a PT, I always look at it as injury prevention and making sure you're healthy and able to play, number one. We don't want to get injured doing anything. That's always my number one. And then number two, for someone like you, is going to be, okay, can we get you moving a little better within your certain type of swing, whatever your matchups are and how you're swinging it? Like, can we reinforce those with a little bit of exercise? And like I said, that's going to be like, to your point, a small percentage, maybe 10% of your workout, right, is going to be like doing some things that can maybe reinforce what you're doing or what you're working on. Maybe it's early extension, maybe it's something else, you know? So 10 to 20%, we're looking at like, okay, let's do some specific things that maybe can reinforce. Most of it's going to be stronger, more mobile, and then some sort of speed, power aspect. Now, if I'm talking to someone who's a 20 handicap, who's really stiff, they can't move their body, they, you know, their swing is not grooved except for a big slice, right? And so I'm looking at them and I'm going, okay, you're like, getting stronger is definitely going to help you. And, you know, lifting weights and doing some power work is definitely going to help you. But if you're just have a huge slice, you have no body awareness, you don't know what your core is doing, like, I'm going to approach that differently and say, okay, there's better things we can do to get you swinging the club the way you want. So yeah, throwing medicine balls and doing jumps and becoming more athletic is something everybody should do at every age, right? I want everybody becoming more athletic. I want everybody jumping. I want everybody sprinting if they can, right? Doing those sorts of things just to be overall more, because that's quality of life. But I want to look at like, let's get you moving better so that you can get some proper sequencing in your swing. And that's probably going to get you 10 to 20 yards just doing that without even improving your strength. If you can start moving better, improving your sequencing, then you're going to deliver the club more square. You're going to hit it more solid, right? You're not going to put this huge side spin, swipey, wipey, you know, shot, putting all the spin on the ball that you're losing 20 yards right there. Like, okay, let's get you your body moving better. Let's get you some awareness, some coordination within your trunk and your arms. Because the average person like doesn't have very good body awareness. They don't know what, they can't feel what they're doing. They can't break down their parts of their body. And so there's a lot of like coordination type exercises that you can do that really has a lot of benefit for the average like higher handicap, maybe overweight person that doesn't move as good in their core, right? Because they have a lot more mass there, or someone that's older. So there's different factors where I'll take those into consideration and say, okay, let's work on getting some mobility. Oh yeah, your trunk, you move this far side to side, right? Getting stronger, like until you can make a better turn, like getting stronger is not going to help you that much. Like you need more ramp. If you can't take the club back, you have no runway to create speed. You need to be able to create that runway. You need to be able to get a little hip separation. You need to be able to use the ground properly. Then, yeah, now let's start working on moving faster. You have some sequencing now. Let's really ramp up the power. So I hope that answers your question, but it's not like a one size fits all.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's like anything, right? The answer is going to vary based on, you know, the skill level of each player and their goals and where they're at just in their fitness journey. But at least the main takeaway I hear is that for most people, like, and as people get older, like, mobility is what everybody says, like, mobility is huge, right? And like, you got to get turned, you got to be flexible, you can't have stiff hips. And if you were to go to the gym for, you know, call it 30, 40 minutes, like most people do, stretching and some mobility work is going to go a lot further than maybe, you know, trying to gain a bunch of muscle. Like, again, you want to hit the ball further, but hitting the ball further is going to happen a lot quicker if you're super stiff or you're getting a lot more mobility and a lot, you know, a lot more stretch work.
Well, and another thing is like mobility is also strength training. Like people think of mobility as just stretching, and passive stretching is actually probably the last thing that I do with people. It's probably like close to 0% of what I would train people, right? Passive stretching is doing very little for people. That's kind of an old way of thinking of like, oh, lengthen the muscles. That's really what's holding you back. It's not. Mostly what's holding you back is that your joints are stiff. Your joints are stiff. Your soft tissues around the joints and connecting the muscles are weak. You're weak in range positions. So people are real strong in the middle, right? And so because we live our lives in the middle, we don't live our lives at in ranges, but golf is played at in ranges. And so it's a matter of getting people stronger, actually doing strengthening in your extreme ranges. That's really what mobility is. And most injuries occur in extreme in ranges, right? So, because people don't work there. And so they get in a position that they're not used to doing, that their muscles are not trained in, their joints are not used to moving in. And then you force yourself in that position because you have a club head pulling you there or on the through swing, whatever. And that's mostly where wear and tear and injuries occur, because these things are the tissues and the joints are not trained to handle it. And so it's like, that's always where I look first. It's like, let's get you trained to handle moving fast. And then once your tissues are like, yeah, we can handle the load. Okay. Let's start ramping it up.
Yeah. I love it. We'll have to, I mean, I've been following your page and I love not only like your journey, but I've taken a lot of tips from just like, you know, I used to be doing stuff on the range pre-round, like call it like hip mobility and movement stuff. I tried to do that a lot more last year. I need to work it into my routine this year. It was really cool. Last year, we kind of did this event at the end of the fall. And Eric Van Royen, he's a gopher guy, came and played out at our club. And our good friend who knows him very well was saying that if he has 30 minutes before tee time, he has a 20-minute mobility and stretching routine he has to go through. If he has 25 minutes, he'll do the 20-minute routine. It's a non-negotiable for him. And that like opened my mind to like, man, if I had 30 minutes, I would show up and I'd go like, you know, 5 minutes would be putting, you know, 15 minutes would be hitting balls, 10 minutes would be chipping, I'd run to the first tee. And like a pro is thinking, I have to warm my body up and get my body in a good position to swing well that day. Otherwise, nothing else matters. And so that was like a light bulb that really came on for me, which is like, you got to take care of the body, but you got to get we've all had those sessions where like, maybe you go to the gym that morning or you have a really good workout, you just hit the ball better that day. And it's because your body's warmed up and it's moving the right way, as opposed to like just showing up, being cold. And it's like, yeah, it took you 4 or 5 holes to warm up. And fuck, man, that's a third of your rounds. So it's like, you know, you need to focus on it before you even tee off, which is something I'm going to be taking into this year.
Yeah. And if you get injured or if you're playing with pain, you're not going to play your best. You know, in order to get better, you need to practice, you need to do certain things. And if you're not able to do that because you're in pain, you know, people kind of just think of pain and like nagging pains as like, oh, that's just I'm getting old. It's like, no, it's not because you're getting old as much as it's because you're not getting your body ready to handle the demand. Like, it's, you can be 65 and still, like, look at, like, Vijay Singh. He's 60 years old and he's still crushing it on the senior tour.
Did you just see that post he had the other day about his ball speed and how far he's hitting it? Bro, it's scary.
Yeah, he's hitting it longer now than probably, you know, he ever has.
Yeah.
And he's 60. He's like 61 or something. And it's like, he's rare. It seems like he's rare. I never hear about him getting injured and missing time on tour. Like, he's still playing at a high level on the senior tour. Bernhard Langer, same thing. Like, he tore his Achilles, but he bounced back super quick. Why is that? Because he's trained. His body is able to recover because he's trained. And then you look, and I get this all the time as well. It frustrates me so much, is people will be like, John Daly wouldn't do this. I'm like, have you seen John Daly lately? The dude can barely walk to his golf cart. Like, he limps around. He looks terrible walking. He looks like he's in so much pain. Like, you look at someone who's been working out their whole life, Gary Player, right? In his 80s, he's still going after it. He's playing every day. And then you look at someone like John Daly, or someone who doesn't work out, who's known for not working out. They're in pain all the time. They can barely move. They have to use the golf cart. It's like, okay, so if that's what you want for your older life, if you want to be in pain, barely moving, John Daly is one of the best athletes to ever play the PGA Tour. I don't care what his body looks like. The dude is an athlete. Like, to be able to, his mobility, his strength, his power, like, he was hitting the ball longer than anyone. He was hitting the ball basically like current PGA Tour distances, long hitter distances, back with like a steel headed driver in the early 90s. Like, dude could put it out there. And the length of his swing, his amount of backswing, all that, like, he was an athlete and extremely talented. Don't compare yourself to him. Like, no one is him.
you know? Even Tiger, like, says that. Tiger said that, yeah. Right? He's like, dude, if I had John Daly's just pure talent and skill with the golf club, I wouldn't have to do all the things that I have to do. He's a total anomaly, which is, I mean, he's obviously great for him, but he's a freak. You can't compare yourself to him.
No, and so, like, if you take the most talented person in a sport and you say, well, he isn't doing it, well, you're not him. Like, you can't compare yourself to the person who's like one of the few special talents in the game who can do things that you can't do. Like Jon Rahm. Well, Jon Rahm has a short backswing. I get that all the time. Jon Rahm has a short backswing. He can still hit it far. Well, you're not 6'4", 240 with insane hands. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't have the, Jon Rahm has the best, TPI has said Jon Rahm has the best sequencing in the game, as far as how effective their kinematic sequence is and how their body move, his body moves. So, like, okay, so he has a shorter swing and he can still hit it far. I guarantee if his swing was longer, he'd be hitting it 20 to 30 yards farther than he does. The dude is a beast. He is huge. So, yeah, I get that all the time. I'm just like, okay, you're right. Like,
yeah, no, you probably know better than me, but yeah, but whatever works for you. Yeah, no, it's it is one of the interesting things about the sport, and what I realized over the past year or two is just call it golf body types, like how different people have to swing and can swing based. Like, for me, my arms, like my wingspan is like 6'10", but like close to 7 feet, and I'm 6 foot tall, maybe 6'1".
Wow.
So like, I have these super long arms. Right. And like, and that's where I could generate my speed, because I can get really far back here. And it's not necessarily turn, it's just I have really long arms. That's how I can generate power and speed. And I talked with, he's in your area, you know, Monty Scheinblum, by any chance, or know the name?
Maybe. I know the name. I don't know him.
Yeah. He was like long drag guy. He's a top coach and instructor. He's in the California area. Maybe it's LA, not San Diego, but he's a really good follow on Instagram. And I had this conversation with him because it's fascinating to me how some of the longest hitters in the world, like Rory McIlroy, are tiny. Like, they're small dudes, right? Like, they're not, you know, Jon Rahm, 6'4", 240, but the way that they can generate power from a nice, compact, like, Rory's one of the best drivers of the ball ever. And how big is he? Maybe like 510-ish, like if I'm in the right realm. And so it's all to my point that like different body types swing differently to generate power differently. There's a million ways to do it. And you obviously have to figure out what works for you and your body type, where you're at, and kind of work around that. Because I think way too many people will find a swing maybe on tour that they like. It's like, oh yeah, I want to swing like this. And to your point, it's like, you're not 6'4", 240. Or like, you're not 5'10", 180. Like, you got to swing kind of within your capabilities. So it's an interesting thing about golf that I find fascinating. And now that we're kind of at the end of this, my last question to you, I'll be a little selfish here. My journey is maybe not as aspirational as yours. I'm not trying to play in the Masters, at least not yet. But I'm trying to get to a +3 this year. Like I talked about, I'm kind of like in that +1, +2 range. I can share like all my stats, and I know that these different areas, you know, probably need to get better at than others, but how do you get there? I've really enjoyed your videos talking about like staying in your process, not getting upset when you make like a double bogey. You know, like what's the key to getting to a +3 other than having more scores that are in those like high to mid 60s as opposed to the like mid to high 70s?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can only tell you what I've done that's, I feel like, helped my game. So I like completely revamped my swing. I don't think that this is for everyone or most people. But in 2020, during COVID, I kind of, when I started being like, okay, I'm back in golf, I want to start playing tournaments again. I'm still swinging with the swing that I had in college, where I remember I felt like my mechanics were holding me back and I felt like I had hit a ceiling. I used to early extend big time, and that's kind of like how I was actually taught to play. My instructor as a teenager actually taught me to early extend as like a move to hit it straighter. So I would early extend, I would stay high with my right hip, and I would really like release my hands hard to square up the club face. And that's kind of my feel, that I would straighten my right arm, release the club hard. And that my miss was always a huge block to the right. Obviously with early extension, I had to close down the club and square it up. And if I didn't time it right, the club would be wide open and I would hit a big block. And so that was always my fear. And I would get up on tight holes. And that's why I would lay up a lot, because with driver, I could be good, and then I'd hit one way right and it'd be out of bounds or in a hazard. So I had to fix that. So I basically underwent an intensive swing change where I just basically broke down my swing and started changing it up. And so all my feels now are completely 100% different than what they were back then and what I played in college. Like literally every feel I have is totally different. And so I hit a lot of balls. I mean, I hit a bucket of balls basically every day for years. And it's been a long process, but it's my dispersion is much better than it was. So I definitely hit the ball, you know, 20 plus yards, 25 yards farther than I did then. But my dispersion is better. And because of that, I'm also more confident to be more aggressive. So I think that's why I'm able to shoot some lower scores now. I still don't probably shoot, you know, I rarely shoot under like 65 sort of thing. Like that would be 64, 65's still like a low score for me. I've yet to break through that to that like 63, 62 barrier. That's kind of what my next goal is to be able to shoot some kind of 10 under type scores. But for me, like the dispersion was huge, gives me more confidence to be aggressive when I'm playing well. So mindset, I guess, would be changing my mindset to like, when I'm playing well, I need to be more aggressive. That's when I need to be pumping driver. That's when I need to be hitting a little bit, aiming a little bit more at flag sticks. I play kind of like Decade. I don't really currently use Decade, but I know a lot about it. And everything that I've kind of learned about it is kind of how I've always played golf. You know, it's shading to the center of wherever the land is, wherever the green is, not going at flags. So that's kind of the way I play anyways. And so it's kind of like, if anything, it's sort of like when I'm playing well, is kind of like maybe getting away from that a little bit, being more aggressive, and trying to go low. And then when I'm playing poorly or not as well, I feel like I'm off. That's when I can play a little more conservative, and just try to make a score. So I think that's been huge for me, to shoot a little bit lower. Obviously making putts is crucial. I work harder on my putting than I used to. And I've changed a lot of things kind of about my putting, but, and my chipping, but, kind of really putting a lot of effort into speed control and then inside 10 feet, really, really practicing rolling the ball online. I use one of those, little putting aids with the gate, you know, and I make sure my club face is lined up square. That's a big thing for me. I tend to get aimed right. And so using a putting aid with a line on it where I can line up my club face to make sure it's square and I know where I'm aimed. Looking down the line, I know where I'm aimed. Rolling the ball end over end on short putts, making sure I'm hitting my line. And then on longer putts, it's all about lag putting for me. So those are kind of the keys that I've found is kind of like a go-to that I do every day or every practice session is, so I guess you could call that like being more intent with my practice and, really being focused. I rarely ever just throw down balls and hit putts. If I have 30 minutes to practice putting or 45 minutes to practice putting, which is usually about all I have, first 10 to 15 minutes, I got my station set up where I'm just hitting 5-footers, rolling it, trying to roll it online, trying to hit it through the gate, checking my alignment, all those things, looking at my setup. And then another, you know, 15 minutes of just like speed stuff if I can. And then the last like 15 minutes, maybe like randomized stuff from 3 to 15 feet, trying to work on 3 to 15 footers, hitting a lot of random breakers and different sorts of putts to kind of like simulate on course conditions.
Yeah, the big one, the big takeaway for me and all that was the mindset, which is for me something I'm trying to work on a lot in the off season, just because, you know, I have those days where I'll go out. I had a 9-under round last year. Like I know it's in there. But the days where I just let things go, I don't know if it's like I lose track or what happens, but I mean, I'm sure you know this feeling, like you have one bad swing, right? And it might not be till hole 9 or 10. And then you let that one bad swing kind of compound and get into your head. And all of a sudden it kind of bleeds over. All of a sudden you make like 1 or 2 bogeys and you're like, where the hell was the guy in the front nine, you know, or like where, yeah, where'd the swing go? And so, to your point, I just think mindset's a massive thing in golf. There's a lot more pros out there getting, mindset coaches, and, you know, there's like the mental side of the game, or like the kind of course strategy type stuff of just like making good decisions, putting yourself in good spots. And then there's the other side of just like that kind of confidence factor. And it's interesting, like week to week, you can see it on tour, especially year to year, you can see it on tour, the guys that like just exude this confidence and they play with it and then it goes away and it might never come back. I mean, like Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas to me are great examples of that. Like you can just tell right now, they're not playing with this confidence that they had for these years where they were just these unstoppable forces in the game. And something happens, they get down on themselves or what are you, I don't know the reasons, but you want to get back to playing with that level of confidence that, you know, you've got this good golfer inside of you, just got to come out.
Yeah. Most players don't ever get it back. You know, I saw some stat, someone opened my eyes to that a while ago where, you know, the average top PGA Tour player, we're talking like top 10 type player, or even number one player, only has less than like two, three years where they're playing at that level. Almost all of them, except for the greats of the game. We're talking like Tiger, Phil Mickelson, Ernie Els, right? The all-time like Hall of Famers. Every other like top five, top 10 player, they're only at that level for 2 to 3 years generally. an entire career. And then they accumulate most of their wins within a few years. You know, if they have 5 wins on tour, 7 wins on tour, whatever, they get most of those within a handful or less years. Most of the time it's like 2 to 3. And then they drop off. And it's like, and then they're never that player again. And we think of them as being, you know, they're that top 5, top 10, top 20 player. But it's like most players only have that spurt for like a short time, and they're never that player again. And they're always good, and maybe they win another tournament or two in their career, but they're never that same player, and they never get that back. And it's like that's most players that are really good PGA Tour players. So it's crazy to think about it, but it's just like golf is so fickle, and confidence, and you know, your technique at that time, and the confidence, and everything's blending together. And then maybe you stray from that, or you lose it, and then your confidence goes, and you can never replicate it.
Yeah, or not to mention the guys that maybe didn't win as much as they should when they were at their peak, like a Ricky Fowler. Everyone remembers that year he got like second in all the majors, and I think he did win the maybe it was the Players. It wasn't the major, but anyways, like those guys that have it, but they never really broke through, and then they're not really up there with the greats, and then. You know, just kind of fall to the wayside. But then there's also the point of like, you know, the guys that don't win but are still literally on the PGA Tour year in, year out. Like,
yeah.
I don't think Tommy Fleetwood has a win, right? But he's consistently in the top.
Not on the PGA Tour, yeah.
Yeah, he's consistently in the top probably 20 to 30 players on tour year in and year out. And so it's something that's just crazy about the sport, man. And like, you start to bring that down to, you know, call it our level, elite amateur level golf. Is like, you know, how could we take advantage of those years where we're just really, really feeling it? But I feel like I'm getting close. Clearly you're there. Now I want to like take advantage of it and see how good I can get, because at some point it's going to go downhill and probably never come back.
I don't feel like I'm there yet. I still feel like my best days are ahead of me. I still feel like I'm learning a lot, and I have more in the tank, I think. Like, so that's my goal. I think the next 5 years is going to be my best golf. So hopefully I can, I mean, there's so many really good amateur golfers out there. Obviously winning the US Mid-Am is like an insanely lofty goal. I don't think I'm there yet. Obviously I don't think I'm good enough at this point. But I'm still getting better in my mind, and we'll see what the future can bring. I mean, I would love to, first of all, qualify for the US Am and US Mid Am. I qualified for the State Am last year. And I mean, there's as good a golfers in Southern California as anywhere in the country. And so I feel like if I can compete with golfers around here, then I can compete with golfers anywhere in the country. And so it just takes a week where I get hot with the putter and my game is clicking. And I feel like, especially in a match play tournament, like I can beat anyone on any given day if I'm playing my best golf. And so it's just a matter of syncing all that up. And it's sure it's a long shot, but you got to have some kind of goal, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to have fun with it. So it's been awesome to follow your journey. Again, I appreciate you taking some time and coming on. Hopefully it won't be the last. And if you ever make your way up to Minnesota, we got some pretty good golf up here, man. You talk about the USAM, it was at Hazeltine last year, which is, I don't know, maybe 7 minutes from my house. I'm in a club that's pretty close to Hazeltine as well, Windsong Farm. So if we got Interlochen, I think they're top 100, Weipper Yacht Club's top 100. So you ever come up here, you let me know. You always got a place to stay, hang, and play some pretty good golf. So looking forward to continuing and watching your journey, and I'll stay in touch. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
For sure. Stoked.
Yeah. Thanks, Dick.
Thanks,
have a good one.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.